Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. What does the word home mean to you? H-O-M-E. Well, home can mean a lots of things to a lot of people. Tell me now, can you imagine what it would be like to be a teenager out on the streets alone, far, far away from home? Have you ever wondered why some teens make it and survive while other teens don't? Now, would you like to learn what happens when a street kid tries to contact their family? We're talking about kids who are out there right now. Tell me, have you ever heard about a book called Layla? Or have you ever heard about an organization called Ricky's Revolution? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to deal with teens who are out on the streets? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I'll be introducing you to my guest co-host. She's been on the show with us. She's a regular. She's extraordinary, and she will provide us with inspiration, information, and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk 4 Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeartRadio. Our show now has had over 2.2 million listeners to date. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest co-host today. She is an author, healer, teacher, and spiritual leader, and an incredible keynote speaker. Having taught quantum healing, somatic polarity, ancient wisdom teachings, and spirituality to students all over the world, her lifelong passion is to bring modern relevance to this wisdom, weaving the web of nonviolence and empowering sacred movement in its highest vibration. Welcome back to our show again this month, Jeannie Kerrigan. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I'm always looking forward to having you on the show. You know, for people who have never heard us, our little visit, our little chit-chat session, could you just quickly give us a little bit of your background? Tell us a little bit about where your success story began, and tell us a little bit about some of your struggles.
Oh my gosh, that's such a wonderful opening question.
Yeah, okay.
So, hi. I love being on the radio with you. You and I always seem to do really well together when we chat. And we have been talking about my book, Layla, which has been out now for, 5 years or so, maybe not even that much. But I wrote the book Layla, and it's the story of my life, beginning with my father and his death, and then going back over all of what had happened to me and really the tangle between he and I and how that affected me adversely most of my life, mm-hmm. From sexual abuse to the streets to drug addiction to just horrible degradation and rape and all kinds of things, all the way through to the other side and putting together the nonprofit Ricky's Revolution. So Layla, the book, talks about being able to get through all of it in a good way, but also I think affirming those for those people that are still out there and those people that are still struggling with all of these issues, affirming that there is a way out, that there's a places to go, that there's help out there. There's all those people who are struggling with abuse issues, who have been raped or sexually abused, giving them hope. That's pretty much what I do. I also have a private practice where I help people to heal from that trauma, because of course, through trauma comes a lot of pain and suffering, and healing that pain and suffering, I think, is one of the most important things that we can do on the planet.
Well, for my listeners, I want to share with you that Jeannie's book Layla is a fabulous book. You name it, and Jeannie's done it. She's been out on the streets. She knows the whole drill. Been there, done that. I must tell you, it's a fascinating book, but it is a rough read because Jeannie doesn't spare you. She shares everything. And this is one of those books that will certainly bring you to tears. And there's so many struggles and things that Jeannie shares with us that are, I know they must have been very, very difficult to write about. I can't imagine how you pulled it all out of you, but you did. And it's a fantastic book for anyone who's dealing with teenagers or who knows someone who has problems with their kids. Jeannie, share a little bit more about, briefly, give a lead into how did you form Ricky's Revolution? How did that come about?
So Ricky's Revolution nonprofit is, you can read about Ricky, the story of Ricky. Ricky is a monkey, a stuffed monkey that I had when I was a teenager. I stole him from a store. This is the story I always tell, and kept him with me for years, 7 years to be exact. And he was just a little stuffed monkey that I kept tucked into my shirt or into whatever I had with me, my coat, my pocket. He was my solace. He was my buddy. He was my traveling partner. When I was raped or alone or afraid, I had a little stuffed monkey who really sometimes, I mean, it sounds crazy, but when you're a little kid, it doesn't. He sort of helped me to survive a lot of times. When I was so afraid and stuck and had no place to go, I did have him. Mm-hmm. I lost him in one of the rapes that's described in the book. It was a horrendous time. I think I was picked up by a trucker who picked up myself and two other friends of mine, and we ended up getting split up. To this day, I don't know what happened to those friends. I don't know where they went. I don't know if they even lived. Mm-hmm. But they grabbed us for to pimp us out is what the deal was. And I was abducted, brutally beaten and raped by that man. And I think they intended for us to go work the streets in Georgia. That was what I think was going on. Mm-hmm. But due to you want to call it a miracle or due to a miracle, I ended up not staying with him. I ended up being put out on the streets. But what did happen was I left that monkey. Uh-huh. And so what we've done is we've recreated that monkey. It turned out that I ended up getting help from a woman on the other end of a phone when I called for help. And so we put the Ricky now back out on the streets, the same stuffed little monkey. He looks the same. He's adorable. And we put the Safeline helpline numbers on him so that we can get that monkey out to other people who are on the streets lost and alone. And number one, give them solace. But number two, they have these numbers, the Be Free number, which is a text number that's through the Polaris organization, another nonprofit that's doing really, really well, by the way. Mm-hmm. That Be Free number is a safety line and a helpline. Within minutes, these kids are picked up and brought to a safe place and transported to where they need to be. We also have the RAIN, Rape Abuse Incest Line, and the Runaway Hotline. Those are amazing organizations that we support through Ricky's Revolution.
Oh, now how many of these Ricky's have you given out, and who do you give them to? How do you get them to the people that need them?
We have two different ways of doing it. What we also wanted to do is create a web of caring, loving individuals, because there's so many of us who care about humanity on this planet. So we wanted to set it up so that other people could help us do it, and it works. We have street teams and shelter teams.
Okay.
Anybody who likes the Ricky or wants to help, we give them Rickies. If they're not trained to be on the streets, they bring them to drop-in shelters, which is incredible.
Okay.
A wonderful place to reach the kids, because they can drop in. If you've ever been to a drop-in shelter, you go in at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be out by 6 a.m. But it gives you a safe place, and it gives you some food, and they have a little bit of access to some things, but very, very little money. So we leave a lot of the monkeys that drop in a lot of shelters across the United States, 24 states we have Ricky's in right now.
Wonderful.
And then
wonderful.
Street teams, we, my partner and I, Catherine Patton and I, and now we have Julianne Ashton, who's joined us, and Alaric, we have a little team here, and we go out on the streets and we deliver the Rickies personally to those that are stuck on the streets, in the alleys and in the homeless towns that most cities have, and we give the Rickies out for free.
Oh, what a powerful message you're giving these children.
Yeah.
You're giving them a message that you care, and you're giving them a message with the means to get help. And it's, you know, giving it to them gives them back a little bit of their dignity. Don't you agree?
Exactly. And one of the things that we've just done, I want to mention this real quick, is we attended the Freedom Summit 2015. Which is the largest organization in that pulled together, we are pulling together 50 nonprofits joined, and we're one of the nonprofits that joined them, and a task force to stop sex trafficking. And we, in lieu of the Super Bowl that's coming to San Francisco, we went there, and oh my God, Ricky was a hit. He was
he's so cute.
He was adorable. Everybody was carrying these Rickies. I was seeing the Ricky coming out of backpacks and, you know, the purses and the pockets of all these people. And he's become a very a beautiful way of getting that Be Free number for sex trafficking out to these to the victims. I mean, they're doing everything from training taxi drivers to hitting the streets to going to the hotels, because whenever there's an event like this, the sex trafficking goes up. And it's pretty well known now. You know, there's 100,000 children in the United States that are being trafficked, and we really are working hard to pull it together. So we've started a GoFundMe campaign to get 5,000 extra Rickies for that.
Oh, wow. And how many, and share your website, so if anyone would like.
Well, the website is www.rickiesrevolution.org. We also have a Ricky's Revolution Facebook page, if you put in Ricky's Revolution, and all of our videos. You can see a video of Catherine and I at the Freedom Summit. We put together a great video with that, and people can support us that way.
Well, Ricky's getting to be an internet celebrity in his own right, which is the plan. And my plan is to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Jeannie, we're going to go back and talk a little bit about the journey she traveled that she shares with us in her book, Layla. We'll be right back.
Layla, a book by Jeannie Kerrigan, will take you on a journey, a raw, heart-wrenching journey. The final resting place? Love. Jeannie is an author, healer, and executive director of Ricky's Revolution Nonprofit. You can get your copy of her book at jeanniekerrigan.com. Ricky's Revolution comes directly out of Layla, dedicated to helping homeless runaway youths and victims of sex trafficking reach a place of safety. We distribute Jeannie's monkey named Ricky with vital hotline numbers embroidered on him free to children on the street through loving collaboration with thousands. Proceeds from the book and your donations have saved lives. rickysrevolution.org. Are you living the life you always wanted? Is your relationship fulfilling or a constant roller coaster ride? Do you know how to chart your own path? If you are sick of struggling, overwhelmed, stressed, but desire balance, emotional freedom, and a purposeful life, then it's time to try something that really works. Dr. Casey's unique result-oriented emotional mastery technique will teach you how to be your own therapist while empowering you to be your best. Learn more at drsimoncasey.com. That's drsimoncasey.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back to the No Whine Zone, and we're visiting with one of my favorite co-hosts, Jeannie Kerrigan, and she is sharing with us her story, her success story, her story of struggle and survival, and also sharing with us her wonderful organization, Ricky's Revolution, that she founded. Now, let's talk about your book, Layla. When we left off last month, as Jeannie shares a little bit of the book with us each month, we talked about what happened when your parents gave you to the state. How did that feel?
I wrote in the book that it actually felt right. Isn't that crazy? I did. Yeah. Because, we have to go back to, I was sexually abused from the age of 3. And by the time I had gotten to Winnebago, I had been through a couple of rapes and some deaths. And I never felt like my home was my home. It was never a comfortable place. I mean, I couldn't logically say to you at the time, mm-hmm. that I love to go home and it's not a safe place because my father's abusing me. I couldn't say that at that time. By the time I got to Winnebago, everything was so confused. And I think we had talked about that. You know, my dad had made it about me. I was a juvenile delinquent. I was a runaway. I was using drugs. I was on the streets more than I was at home, and nobody really talked about, you know, the old saying, the elephant in the living room. Nobody talked about it. And so when I got to Winnebago, I was afraid. It was a very eerie, dark place. I was so scared. Oh my God.
Jeannie, how old were you when you were put there?
I was 15, 14 going on 15.
Okay.
Yeah, when they left me, when they gave up custody of me, it felt like, okay, this is it. I'm not theirs anymore. I didn't think beyond that, but I really didn't belong to them. I never felt like I belonged to them, you know?
Yeah, and being with them was scary.
Yeah.
Had to have been just a very scary situation. So tell us a little bit about what happened when you were signed in, and what was it like initially? You were probably petrified.
I was petrified. I was. Uh-huh. And somebody could have warned me that where I was going was a mental institution. I didn't quite get that. You know, I was in a lot of, there was so much denial and there's so much disassociating in my world at that time. You know, my father was still treating me like his pet, you know, like his little girl, and I was screwing up all over the place, and you know, sexually speaking, my life was just in shreds, just shreds. Mm-hmm. So I was so disassociated from whatever was real. And so this disassociated, scared little girl went from the detention center to a Winnebago Mental Health Center, which was right out of the movies. I mean, I think I explained it really good in the book. It was right out of the movies.
Well, out of the windows. you talk about they left me alone, at least on the first day. And you broke out in hives on the second day.
I did. I was so afraid. Yeah. Broke out in hives.
And plus, this is difficult. At one point, you were the only girl in the program. How humiliating to be stuck with all these guys and be the only girl. Yeah. Share a little bit about what it was like playing the game.
So this was a treatment center that was designed in the late 60s, I believe. Gosh, you know, my memory is, I'm getting old.
Yeah, I know.
It was the old Synanon treatment. And they, you know, it was the onslaught of the drug addicts that came out of the 60s. And they were trying to figure out a way to treat them and to help them get better, because there was just this mass drug addiction all over the planet, as we all know. Mm-hmm. So Synanon was a boot camp type treatment, and they had a program for adults, which was called Telerian Community, and then they had the adolescent program, which was modeled after the adult program. Mm-hmm. So it was a very intense treatment. It was a behavioral change you treatment, and then the way that they did it was to verbally accost you daily. I mean, you worked. You got up at 6 a.m, you scrubbed floors with toothbrushes, just like you would in a boot camp. You got pulled up, you got called up, you got yelled at. The game was an intense therapy that lasted all day. Sometimes it would last days. We did a weekend long game where you didn't even sleep, where you just indicted people. And it was designed to take you down so that they could build you back up and you would be stronger. And it took me down.
It took you down. How long did it take for you to go? How did it? Yeah, you must have went down pretty quickly. Huh?
Yeah, I went down pretty quick. I was in shock at the first game. You know, I remember saying before, it was a group therapy. The therapists were very well trained in it, and you would all get together. You couldn't leave the room unless you had to go to the bathroom. But this was the game. No drugs in, on, or about you. No violence. No threats of physical violence. If you're getting up, say getting up. If you're sitting back down, say getting down. And I have an indictment for. I can repeat that. I swear to God. I mean, that came not from the book. That came out of my brain. And they would proceed to call on one person at a time and put them in the hot seat and scream at them. What's wrong with you? You're a slut. You're this. You're that. You're nothing but this. And just try to break you. And it worked. I mean, there was no way around it, really. I got hives that first time, the first game. Yeah. I remember being shell-shocked. And the second game, I sobbed. I just cried.
Mm-hmm. And it was horrible. They called you a slut and a whore.
Yeah.
And at one point, your clothes were criticized, and you were made to wear a burlap sack.
Yes.
So you wouldn't attract attention.
Yeah.
And your days were regimented from morning till night, you ate in the cafeteria, powdered eggs. I like this one. Powdered eggs and green shit on a shingle.
Pretty much.
Mixed in with plastic hamburger and yellow ham. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was the meal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like really fun. Okay. Now, before we go to our break, when all was said and done, because earlier when we started the show, I asked people what home meant to them.
Yeah.
H-O-M-E. And you started to feel like this was your home, didn't you?
I did. You know, the one thing that did happen were the individuals that were at that treatment program, the counselors and the volunteers. There were a lot of volunteers that worked at that program and the residents that I lived with. You cannot live with people with that kind of intensity and not break and not start to be super, super vulnerable. And when I was super vulnerable, they loved me. I have to tell you that. It became home. It became very comfortable. I lived there for a long time, and actually my time was extended there. I fell in love there. Oh, my God. And one of the counselors wanted to adopt me. I mean, yeah, it became home, a mental institution. It was the most love I had ever received in my life.
And this is wonderful. When we come back after our break, we're going to talk about the next chapter in Jeannie's book, Layla, and that chapter is entitled Home. And when we come back, Jeannie's going to share what it was like in her new home. We'll be right back.
Have you ever met someone who was shot in the chest in cold blood and lived to tell it? Now you have. Meet Hannah Lugeri Murray, author, advocate, and survivor of domestic violence, and now the founder and president of Angel of Mercy Shelter of Hope. Her dreamlike life turned to horror as her raging husband stood across her and fired his gun. She was left for dead. By a miracle, she survived to tell her story. Her book is available on Amazon and her website. If you'd like to have a personally signed copy, please visit her website at livetotellit.com. Hannah is now in the process of raising money to build her own shelter in Chandler, Arizona. Her shelter will house abused women, their children, and unique to Arizona, their pets. For more information, please visit her website at angelofmercyshelter.org. Joining January Jones as her co-host on the show is Miles Miller, the Great Success Creator. Miles is a two-time best-selling author with books entitled Against the Grain and Successonomics. He continues to transform 100,000 people all over the world through his speaking and training. His uplifting and essential messages, like Bulletproof, Time Machine, and Strength in Numbers, are impacting every audience he meets. Together with January Jones, they'll explore how to be successful and what steps you can take to achieve the success you want. Visit successhq.net, leadup.biz, and learningbreaks.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Also, my book, Priceless Personalities, is now available at audiobooks.com. One of the priceless personalities in my book is chapter one, and that chapter is Jeannie Kerrigan, entitled Ricky's Revolution. Jeannie, let's talk about how you adapted to your new life within a mental hospital, and tell us about the different phases that you had to go through in order to start healing.
Well, one of the things that happened at this little mental institution, the treatment was very, very abusive. The treatment was direct and it was horrible and it was intended to break us down, but there were human beings that were administering the treatment. And when we did break, they became our uncles and our mothers and our fathers and our brothers and our sisters. We really did all become a family. When we broke into these babies that just sobbed in somebody's arms, you know, we didn't have a whole lot left, and the people that were there did care about us. The other thing that was going on is, we had to go through phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, and I made it to phase four twice because I got put back once.
Oh dear. Well, what I think is interesting about this chapter is that you share that you started to have some good times, and you share you even went snipe hunting.
Yeah, it was snipe hunting. So I started to laugh there. That's the one thing that I remember the most when I was writing this chapter was I realized that was the first time in my life that I had laughed until I cried. Mm-hmm. And you know, people were making fun of me or, you know, doing, you know, joking with me, and I was laughing about it, not taking it personal. Yeah, they took us snipe hunting. That was the big deal. The new person had to go snipe hunting, and they made these little snipes out to be like my Ricky. I was like, oh my God, a little snipe, how cute, you know. I didn't know. I was so naive. sat out in the woods waiting for my snipe as they were going to drive it to me in the woods, and I was going to catch it in a burlap sack and bring it home. And they said I could even have a cage at the hospital to keep my snipe. Oh, my God, it was hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah,
well,
I laughed.
You started laughing, and tell us a little bit about how you got healthy as far as the physical fitness that you were exposed to.
Like any boot camp, you get up in the morning and you run. And the first, I remember getting up in the morning. Well, first of all, getting up at 6 in the morning was horrible, but I would get out there. We'd go out to the woods. Winnebago was it's still there. The mental institution is on a lake, Winnebago, in Wisconsin. And it's a beautiful, beautiful setting. It's trees and woods, and, you know, you're kind of, it's pulled back away from most of society so that you really can't run away. But we would go running in the morning, and the first time I went out, I couldn't even run up. I mean, oh my God, I think I ran maybe 100 feet, 200 feet, couldn't do it. But little by little, every morning you'd go out and I'd have to do sit-ups and I'd have to do running and I'd have to do yoga and they would make you do all these things. And the deal was, is that you would have to get in shape to do these marathon trips that we would take these two or three times a year. And so we were preparing for these big trips that we would all go on together. Ours was a canoeing trip where we went down two rivers and we canoed, I don't know, some ungodly amount of miles in 2 days. But but it worked. And I started getting healthy and I liked it. I started feeling my body. I started somatic healing. It was incredible. I mean, I started to enjoy with the body that I was living in, and it was something other than abuse or rape. It was good for me.
And I love the part about in phase three, you received the certificate for the most sit-ups.
Yes.
And who were you competing against, dear?
All the men that I was living with. I had to beat those guys. You know, found out that there was a little competitive me going on there. Yeah.
Okay. And I love the part where you say, I refuse to lose. You went to phase two and three, and then you started dreaming again and you started grieving. And what happened that when you got to phase four, you were sent back? What did you do wrong?
There was a man there.
Okay.
It was a boy. And I think for the first time it was a boy crush. It was it was a boy crush, and it was a real boy crush. And we were, you know, the rules are pretty strong in there. You could not, get what that word is, but you couldn't have a relationship with somebody. Finally, they ended up actually sort of silently giving us permission to have that relationship. But, fraternizing, that's the word. We couldn't fraternize.
Fraternize, okay. Okay, so then it comes time, you're finishing the program, so to speak, and most people would want to go home. However, you begged them not to send you home. How did that play out? Tell us what happened when you went for your visit.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that were going on that, again, I didn't know about. You know, I was discovering me. I was becoming more open. I was falling in love with David. I was really, really close to all the therapists there. And people, they started to talk about, you know, what are we going to do when you're done? And I initially had never thought about leaving or much less going home to my parents. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid. I was very afraid of leaving Winnebago, number one. I didn't want to go anywhere besides there because it felt so comfortable and so good. But, you know, the staff there said, we have to find a place for you. One of the things that happened to me, which was a really good thing, is Dan, who was the director of the program, said he was always asking. He was always confronting me. He was always questioning what was going on in my home. I think he knew. And he always had it in the back of his head. I know this because I've talked to him as an adult. I actually worked with him as an adult years later. But he said, I always knew that there was something happening in that family. We just couldn't get to it. We couldn't get you to get to it. So they sent me home for a week on a test run. I had to go and live in that house for a week. He did not want me to go, but he wanted me to go experience what it was like to be. And it was horrible. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. Going into my parents' house was just awful.
Yeah. And Dan did not trust your father, and
no,
he said it out loud.
Yes.
And thank God for Dan. And so basically, you didn't last very long at home, and you came back, and that pretty much was a failure, which was probably a real blessing for you. And then you went back, and then they tried to find a placement for you, and that was difficult.
It was difficult. They extended my stay. Dan, you know, got what he wanted in the sense that he had support now with the state, because the state really had say over what I did and didn't do. Mm-hmm. But he had gotten support through the state, and he had told the state he had good documentation that said I should not go home. And so they extended my stay at Winnebago, and they started to look for a place for me to live. And they found one. Yeah, months later.
Well, let's talk. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And let's talk about Reflections of a Dream and share with us a little bit about meeting David and your experience basically falling in love in a mental institution. It's quite an experience.
Oh, my God, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it doesn't sound. But you survived. We'll be right back with Jeannie Kerrigan.
The moment after you serve your customer, what will they tell the world? Social media has us so connected that a single voice has unprecedented power to benefit and to harm. What do your customers say? Do you know? Do you respond? What do you say? For years, Steve Holtquist has been helping businesses use the internet to be more productive and successful. Now he's showing businesses how to go back to the future, fostering and empowering relationships. Learn how to work in this new world. Find Steve at InfiniteSummit.com. One expert, one solution. The book, The 411 on Step-Parenting, teaches you how to create a well-blended step-family. The 411 on Surviving Teenhood helps parents and teens cope with teenage temptations, teachable moments, and teenage social dilemmas. The books, The 411 on Life Skills and Ace Your Life, helps those living on their own with home and money management, personal care and safety, and much more. An award-winning, best-selling author, registered nurse, and personal growth mentor, Michelle Sfakianos will help you. Get the 411, my411books.com. January is thrilled to be welcoming Dr. Nancy Irwin, who will be co-hosting on iHeartRadio with January Jones. As a doctor of psychology, clinical hypnotist, and author of U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, Dr. Nancy is an agent for change. Many people believe that change can be scary, but she believes it can actually be creative and fun. She does know a thing or two about change, because at age 44, she transitioned from a stand-up comedian to shrink. Oh, believe her, the road from comedy to mental health is very short indeed. Most fears are learned, and the good news is whatever we learned, we can unlearn. Smoking, overeating, fear of public speaking, test anxiety, what have you. On our show, we'll be discussing how you can dissolve that negative programming and free your inner winner. Change is inevitable. You can either affect it or accept it. Visit her site, drnancyirwin.com. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with my co-host today, Jeannie Kerrigan. And Jeannie, right now, let's briefly share again your website information and things that people can do to support Ricky's Revolution.
Okay, so JeannieKerrigan.com is where you can find out more about myself and Ricky and Ricky's Revolution. And also Ricky'sRevolution.org is where you can and help us get Ricky's on the streets in whatever way you feel compelled to through your heart.
Okay. Very good. Now, basically, Reflections of a Dream, the next chapter is your story about falling in love with David. And you already shared a little bit about it, that they sent you back from phase four because of David. And, yes?
Yeah, I think Reflections of a Dream, the name of that chapter, I loved naming these chapters when I was writing the book. It was so fun. But what happened was, is we were living, it was called the Poly Drug Unit. And because we were the first program of its kind to be designed after the adult Synanon, they decided that it needed a name. The adult program was Telerion. So we, our group, named that program Reflections of a Dream, ROAD, R-A-D. We had an all-day session where we decided that we would give it a name, and we did. Reflections of a Dream. And that is so significant about what happened to, at least for us in that group. I mean, I did meet David. I did fall in love with a man, which was real, the real kind of, you know, what you're supposed to do when you're a teenager. But we also fell in love with each other, and we fell in love with the stars and the sun and the moon and humanity and our bodies. And we just really, it was a spiritual awakening for me. There was a period of time where all the time that I spent until I left there, where I was in joy or I mixed up all the pain and the joy and I wasn't separating it. And I thought maybe I was worth a little bit more than I was before I came in. So this chapter really talks about awakening to humanity and love and goodness and God, maybe. Maybe there was an energy out there and I was a part of it. I wasn't separate from it. You know, it was different. But I also started to remember some other things. I started to remember the abuse. I started to remember my father. I remembered being a little child, a little girl, and my having this energetic committee above me and disassociating from my body and looking down at my dad and seeing his pathetic self. You know, touching me. So there was just a whole lot that came out in that chapter about my awakening, which was a good thing because it was a good thing that I had that awakening because life was about to get really horrible again. Little did I know, you know, when I fell in love with David that a year later I'd be, you know, watching him be buried in the ground. So there was some really important things that happened to me in that program that saved my spirit years later.
Well, and he's the first person that actually told you you were beautiful and he made you look into his eyes and he did so much for you. And also you write about you started to pray and not a begging, crying, wimpy soul. It was more strong, energetic intention for all. You were praying for everyone. Were you starting to learn how to forgive what had happened to you there?
No, I didn't learn a whole lot about forgiveness. I didn't know that I had to forgive anybody. I just knew that I had to love people. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. I didn't actually say, you know, I need to forgive my father. I actually said I just needed to love. I just needed to love more. This little bit opening to I love David and I started to love all these people that I was living with, that love extended out to other people. I just needed to love more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were desperate for that experience.
Yeah.
You write that you cared about life, you cared about pain, and you cared about the essence of goodness in the world. And it broke your heart when other people did not get this. I tried to give it light. I needed to give it light, even if it meant pulling people into the dark first. And you write that they nicknamed you Mommy. How did that happen, Mommy?
Well, because I could see the pain and I felt the pain and the vulnerability. You know, I was the one with hives on that first game and I was desperate. I guess it's the wounded healer in me. I was desperate to give light to other people's darkness because I could and because I was so passionate about people's pain and I was so in love with the universe.
if you could briefly share with us what happened. How did he die?
I had to leave Winnebago, and I did go to girls' home, Mrs. Chase's girls' home, and that's coming up in the next chapters. But David died in a car accident. His mother and his father and David were killed by a truck that ran a stop sign and killed all three of them instantly.
Oh my gosh! And
yeah,
how
killed me?
I was just going to say that's devastating. That's right on a level with losing Ricky. Now you've lost David. Oh, how did you pull yourself together after that one?
I didn't.
You didn't, yeah.
It took a couple years, maybe even longer than that. I mean, I remember crying on David's grave when I was in my 30s.
It shook me.
I had never felt that kind of pain. I don't know if I ever want to. I mean, I felt like somebody had ripped into my chest and pulled my heart out, really, like physically. It was so, my son, losing my son.
Oh, yeah.
But that David was the first, and it tore me up.
I can relate to it slightly. I lost my first husband, whose name was David.
Oh, my God.
When he was 32 in a horrific airplane crash.
Oh.
And at the time, I was 25. And, you know, this is over, we're talking over 40 years ago, close to 50. And you never get over it. It's always a part of what, and it also, you know, over time, it eventually you can smile before you cry and you do get better, but it takes a long time, doesn't it?
It does. I'm so sorry about your husband. I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, every year on the anniversary, it just hits me like a hitting a brick wall. And I'm sure it's like that for you too, isn't it?
Yeah, the fall, you know, in the fall, when the fall comes, it's a difficult time for me because that was a good time with David and I. And it was also, you know, he died in August, but it was also that my son died in the fall. And so when fall comes around, I sort of tend to still have that somatic experience of pulling inside of myself. And
I know exactly what you're saying.
And I,
you know, it's,
go ahead.
I was just going to say it's time for us to go. This has been, as always, so much fun. Well, it's been so interesting and informative, and you always are fun, and I'm looking forward to having you back again with us in July, and then we're going to talk about what happened when you left and you had to leave Winnebago and you had to go out on your own.
Yes.
Thank you, Jeannie, so much, and we look forward to your visit next month.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. Take care of yourself.
You too, dear. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today with Jeannie. Isn't she an amazing gal? My upcoming guests, they will all inspire and inform you and help you to become successful too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. When you can, sign on to my website, januaryjones.com. If you would like to be a guest or advertise with us, just go to info@januaryjones.com. We love sharing our stories and our struggles and our secrets for success. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. If that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest today, Jeannie Kerrigan. Be sure to go to her website, rickysrevolution.org. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.